Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In this pop culture saturated world, what's a nerd to do?
Hang out with your good pals on Nerdy Show, that's what.
Our flagship podcast is a weekly celebration of the multifaceted D20 that is the modern nerd.
When we're not devising horrors that combine VR and spiders or taste-testing weird food, we're discussing the latest geek happenings, digging into our deepest nerd niches,
or interviewing a celebrity or two.
Head to nerdyshow.com or find us on iTunes and experience a multiverse of awesomeness.
The following episode of Flame On is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Flame On, your gay, geeky podcast. I'm Brian, and I'm here with BJ.
Hey, what's up?
Eric.
Howdy.
And Pat.
Hey.
So we are here, and we have convened on this, our 202nd episode, to discuss the week, the month,
the year,
ambiguously defined
the millennium
period of time since last we convened.
Century.
Of all that is pop culture from our gay and geeky perspective. So we are going to run down a few different types of media that have caught our eye, caught our interest, caught our ear, caught our attention, and discuss it.
Caught our heart.
We caught hair on?
What?
I don't know. You're saying it got we got caught on.
Ouch.
Stuff.
For those of us who are a little hirsute, that is painful. So let us move on. So in the news, we have a little brief kind of newsish thing we do, talking about, like, you know, really, really recent stuff. E3 just happened.
Oh, boy.
I know.
Boy, howdy.
And I don't give a... I really don't. There's nothing. I've got nothing for this. So
really?
I hope you
really?
Guys... Yeah, I honestly don't.
Because you didn't do any research? Or
I
or
did,
nothing you, nothing spoke to you?
You did nothing I asked you to do the day
nothing
before.
Nothing spoke to me.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to turn it over to you guys. What did you find E3?
Oh. Well, I... So E3 is always super weird. I know last year, everybody has their own thing now. Nintendo has Nintendo Direct in, like, September. Sony has Sony Direct. Xbox has, like, their own thing. So, like, last year at E3, nobody did anything. And this year, it was all right. I mean, we got 8 trailers for Kingdom Hearts 3 and a release date.
Yay!
It's a game,
I don't
ladies
believe
and
it.
Gentlemen.
It's less than a year away.
Yes. I don't believe it.
It's less than a year away. They did say it was supposed to come out in 2018, but they gave a good reason as to why they're releasing it January 29th is they want, if they release it in December, it will come out in November in Japan, and a month is a long time for all sorts of spoiler shit to get through. So the new release date
won't
is
just... Won't there always be a month difference, though?
Huh? No. There's some weird thing with, like, licensing, so... Nomura gave a statement saying that the new release date is only 4 days after it's released in Japan as opposed to a month.
Oh, okay.
So
well, that's good.
For yep. all the people who have not played Kingdom Hearts, do they need to go out and play 1, 2, and all the whatever in between?
I don't know if you have enough time to just figure out the timeline of lore.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack.
There's even 57 games and even more manga, and
there's a lot to unpack with game
manganese.
If you could get through the dot hack nonsense, you can get through Kingdom Hearts.
So if there was a YouTube video, maybe we can share it with our Facebook friends, because I know for one, I played the first Kingdom Hearts. I liked it. I love Final Fantasy. I'm a fan. But I've heard it got weird after that, and I just don't know that I have enough time in the universe or desire to really play through 2 and everything else that was in between. So yeah, we should, and I know we started watching a video the other day on the YouTubes that
just watch the honest trailer, and it like zips through the entire thing shows you the nonsensicalness of it.
It sounds ridiculous. And like, I can't believe.
Oh, this completely is ridiculous.
It goes from like simple action RPG to a JRPG pretty hard and fast.
What's the J stand for?
Japanese.
Oh,
yeah.
But I mean, unlike other like Final Fantasy, let's say. Like, the story is weird, but it's self-contained. Like, they usually don't span multiple things. There are exceptions, of course. But, like, this just sounded like batshit. Like, I'm like, what is this even? For a game about mashing up Disney and Square characters. Like, it's just crazy. But I'm glad you're excited, and it looks pretty.
I'm very excited.
It has been, when did the first game come out?
The first one.
The second game.
The first game came out September 2002. The second game came out
2016, I think.
June. No. It came out when I was still in college.
Not 2016.
2006.
2006. Yeah. Yes, it has been 13 years.
It's been a minute, as they say.
It's been 47 years.
So, yeah, and it's for all the platforms. No, it's PlayStation exclusive.
Playstation exclusive.
No, it's they're releasing it for Xbox as well.
Oh yeah, hot, yeah, Xbox. Yeah, yeah.
Hot damn!
Xbox's getting it.
There were other PlayStation exclusives which looked amazing, like Spider-Man.
That was my other pick, was Spider-Man. Spider-Man looks absolutely fantastic. Naughty Dog is doing it, same people that did Clank and Ratchet and Clank and Crash Bandicoot. So they've got a really good list of games that have been pretty popular. But they did a phenomenal job. It's supposed to have Miles is supposed to be in it, so you know that's a DLC that's coming.
Yeah, it's supposed to be open worldy, kind of like Batman. The newest Batman games have been.
Then the Lego games, kind of.
Yeah.
So what else? Give me a couple other quick hot picks.
Well, I mean, I guess in honor of it being June and Pride Month and everything, they decided to drop Last of Us 2.
Whew.
Electric Boogaloo.
Exactly.
Excellent.
That is some brutal gameplay.
I'm super excited for it.
Lesbian zombies?
Well, I don't know if the lesbians are zombies yet. They may be.
I mean, selling point.
There was a pretty awesome lesbian kiss in the trailer.
Yeah.
But E3 on a whole was more exciting for me this year because the past couple of years I haven't had a current gen console.
Did you get one?
Oh.
I did.
Ooh, what'd you
I
get?
Decided with the sale going on, and I had some extra pocket change, that I went ahead and got a PS4 Pro because it was only a $50 difference.
Ooh.
Professional.
Exactly.
And you're playing Final Fantasy 14 on it, right?
Nope.
God damn it.
I did get Horizon, the Complete, and Shadow of the Colossus.
Ooh, good choice. Good choice.
Yeah. But now with Last of Us 2 coming out, I want to get the Last of Us Remastered because I've never played it.
Oh.
So I'll go through that.
That'll be a good one to go through.
And then Final Fantasy 14.
No.
I think he's dropping hints.
So they did have news about Final Fantasy 14. Monster Hunter? Monster whatever?
Yeah, it's going to cross over with Monster Hunter World.
Which I've never played, so I have no idea what that means. But I don't know. Do you know about this?
I mean, I've watched people play it on Twitch.
Yeah.
And it just kind of looks generic. Go out, fight big monsters.
Yeah, they do that.
Make bigger weapons, kill bigger things, and they're all very vaguely dinosaur-ish or dragon-ish type monsters.
I mean, that could be cool if they do that as fates in the game, but the other thing they announced for 14 was, well, FanFest is coming up in November, which we all knew, and then they're doing a pocket, like a mobile app. Because they joked about the whole Pokemon Go, that was like their April Fool's thing, but they are actually doing a pocket app. It's not going to be a Pokemon Go thing, at least not yet, but it's going to be a companion to the game that you can take with you on the go, which is kind of cool. I don't know if like WoW does that or any other.
Yeah, they have a companion app where...
It's pretty useless.
Well, I mean, it's for your class order hall, and you send characters out on missions.
Oh,
and they bring back resources
okay,
and stuff.
So that is kind of handy then. Yeah. All right.
They also announced, for our Nintendo friends out there, Smash Brothers Ultimate, which is every Smash Brothers character that has ever been in the game, plus Ridley from, Metroid.
And Splatoons.
And the Splatoon.
Wait, you get to play as Ridley?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, the trailer for that, that's a trailer you all want to go see, because that is some brutal shit. Like, he straight up fucking murders Mario and Mega Man.
Yep. That's like cool. They're not even in the games anymore. They're just dead.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you select them as a character, you just see them lying on the ground.
That's unfortunate. Yeah, just kidding. So, anything else? Is it good?
No, it's good. I know IGN, my IGN, Mojo.com, and GameSpot all have videos of, like, their top picks for E3.
Well, of course, our friend Joshua Yaler at IGN would be a good source for that kind of information, so you should check them out. So, let's move on, talk about, I mean, this is kind of burying the lead a bit, but Pride Month, it is June. June is Pride Month. For Florida, we have 2 months, Pride, well,
family.
And next year we'll have 3 months of Pride, but Pride Month, yay!
It's been raining a lot, so we're getting rainbows.
I had a rainbow on the way back from North Carolina. It was lovely.
I saw a double rainbow leaving work the other day. And
what does it mean?
I pulled over and I cried.
Did you really? Tears of
gayness.
I don't believe you.
I can't cry. I sealed those shut.
Yeah, seriously. we did have a lovely gay days here in Orlando with events across the community, including but not limited to Riptide. Not Riptide. Tidal Wave.
Oh, which is getting Riptide next year. So we're taking that over, apparently.
Is it a takeover or is it a combination?
Well,
you gonna drive out all the other people? Or?
So for those of you that don't know, the Gay Days event, Company. Tidal Wave, and One Magical Weekend all happen at the same time in June. Next year, everything is being spread out with Gay Days moving to August and the Tidal Wave, which is kind of more the bear-centric part of Gay Days. Tidal Wave is keeping June, as well as One Magical Weekend, which is kind of Disney's.
So basically everybody but Gay Days is keeping June.
And Tidal Wave used to have a water park attached to it, Wet n Wild.
Tidal Wave was originally just a water park.
Party. Well, I guess Tidal Wave got with the One Magical Weekend people who are littering the hotel next door, and they're kind of handing off Riptide to Tidal Wave.
Which is Riptide at Typhoon Lagoon?
Yes. Over at Typhoon Lagoon, private DJ. Goes, I think, till like midnight, whereas the last party went till only like 10 p.m. So, yeah, next year's going to be nuts. But this year was pretty crazy, too. This year was actually really good. Ginger Minge performed out at Tidal Wave.
And Jinx Monsoon.
And Jinx.
So you had fun. You went to Tidal Wave.
Yeah, I went to Tidal Wave. I was one of the very few people that didn't develop kennel cough, so...
Good job. Good job.
I am chased.
Pat was around, and I was around a little bit of Parliament's events, and Eric, too. We had some... sorry, didn't mean to bolt you on like that. we had some RuPaul girls.
It was good. Deborah Cox was fantastic, as always, and it was a little more low-key for me this year.
You didn't have to work as much. That was nice.
No, and my wallet is very sad about that.
Oh,
Drinks were drank.
Yes, fans were
very much
thwarted.
So by someone at this table.
Oh, you did get a little messy. Wait, what night was that? Friday night?
Yeah, that was Friday night.
Oh, yes, that's right. It feels like it was so long ago. So, I don't know what other June Pride stuff. That's pretty good. There are in-game events. I know. Well, actually, yes. When this goes out. If you're in Final Fantasy XIV, there is a gay pride celebration on Bahamut, I think, is the server. Crap, I might be wrong about that. But anyway, if you go on, look up Rough Trade Gaming Guild, they're doing an in-game pride parade. And I know the World of Warcraft one is...
Yeah, they had the Running of the Trolls, which is their annual event. It's a fundraiser that's done by the community to support the Trevor Project.
Oh.
And they pick trolls because trolls are one of the races that you can pick a lot of different neon-colored hair styles. So they run across one of the continents in all level 1 characters. They also do a similar event in October, I believe, which is the running of the gnomes, because gnomes use a lot of pink hair, and it's for breast cancer.
Well, I unfortunately won't be able to do this year's Rough Trade Pride Parade, but it was pretty cool when they did it last year. So if you're on Final Fantasy XIV, check it out. All right. Last but not least in the sort of unnamed in the news section, I guess that's the name. I had adventures and wacky times.
Can't wait
until
we have a bumper that says that. That would be great.
All in that one phrase. Just
yeah.
I went to Heroes Con and other music festival things. I will talk about Heroes Con because that's really what we care about. The Heroes Con is the show that we have. Well, I've been going since 2012. And
has it really been going that long?
It's been going for longer than that.
Holy
I just
shit.
Started going in 2012, but it's up in Charlotte. It's put on as a nonprofit by the Heroes Are Hard to Find.
Heroes Aren't Hard to Find. Because that's actually the name of the convention as well.
That's the name, the full name of the convention.
Yes.
And it's also the store they have there in Charlotte that's a business. This year was weird because a lot of the bigger name draw sort of artists, artists, writers from comics, a lot of them bailed. We had Chris Claremont, Mark Bagley. I mean, we still had some really big names. But overall, like, a lot of people just seemed to bail at the last minute. And it did feel a little less well attended. I was only there Friday and Sunday because I went to a music festival on Saturday in Asheville. But highlights, I guess, were running around with my fellow comic book bears people. We were going all over the different floor. Went to the Geeks Out panel, the Dotted Lines panel on Sunday, and got to hear some different LGBTQ and adjacent artists and writers. Teenie Howard was a kind of a fascinating, interesting character I'd never met before, but she was really interesting. And Yoshi Yoshitani, up-and-coming illustrator who I had not been familiar with, but I really enjoy their art style, genderqueer, fine with all the pronouns. Dan Parent, our friend and former interviewee, was there as well. And he has got some really cool stuff with Die Kitty Die coming up. That's exciting. It was a fairly fun convention, as always. A lot of direct access to writers and artists. Got to hang out with Mark Bagley and his daughter Angie, who's a friend of mine, and hang out at the bar and met their friend Amos, who's really pretty cool. Also has a podcast that we may or may not eventually be crossing over with. But Heroes is a great show. If you've never been, middle of June in Charlotte. Charlotte's not a huge city, but it's pretty nice. I highly recommend going to that. I know there's no big comic news, I don't think, coming out of that show. And if there was, I missed it. But yeah, it was a good show. I really, I'm glad that's like the one show I have to go to, because it's all about the art. It's all about the craft of comics. It's not about the celebrities and the media and all that other craziness. So let us move on. Got some movies that we've seen.
There's been a lot since our last episode.
A few of us have seen some of the movies. Some of us have seen a few of the movies. Let's start with Solo, which is a Star Wars story. This is the much, I wouldn't say anticipated, the hotly worried about movie that is a standalone story set in the past about a young Han Solo.
Apparently it did underperform.
According to their expectations, yes.
Yeah.
But it still did pretty well. But
the expectations for any Disney-owned property is like, you know, it didn't make $5 billion and break all the records. It's a failure.
I know that BJ, you saw it.
Yes.
And then Pat and I saw it. I really liked it, honestly. It was fun. It was a good movie. It was Ron Howard directed. I thought all the acting was pretty great. The characterizations of the different Star Wars characters that you know and love was pretty solid and consistent, with younger actors playing these like Han Solo and Lando. I mean, the soundtrack is killer. I love that. I still listen to that every day.
Well, like, and the past two Star Wars movies were pretty dark. Like Rogue One was definitely, it was fantastic, but it was like, it's a little bit of a bummer. And then the last one, also kind of a little bit of a bummer with, like, the death toll. This one was more of, like, kind of a return to that whole action...
adventure.
Action-adventure formula. And it was kind of reintroducing you to older characters. Because, like, Lando Calrissian didn't really get a lot of time in the original trilogy.
No. He's in the second and third movies for a hot second.
Yeah.
And by second and third, I mean the original trilogy. But, yeah, Donald Glover. Got his name right?
Almost stole the show. I really liked him.
Very good characterization. Some people thought he was a little kind of a caricature, but it works. L3, the robot who's sort of the buddy droid to Lando, maybe more. Beloved, great, fun character. The mother of dragons, Emilia Clarke.
Yep.
Was in it as a brunette. I didn't recognize her for a while, but then I was like, who is that? Oh yeah. She plays an interesting character in Han Solo's past. That's got some complexity. Woody Harrelson's character was actually really good. Thandi Newton from Westworld. She has a brief character.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought that was her.
Yeah, yeah. It's part of the film, but a good part and a great character.
And they did. So if you are a big fan of like the animated series, Clone Wars and Rebels. There's a lot of name drops for organizations and crime families and stuff like that that you will actually recognize from Star Wars Rebels and all that. So there's a lot of, and then there's a surprise character reveal.
We
won't spoil that for you.
That definitely surprised me, and I'm like, oh.
But also, all that stuff is covered in Clone Wars and Rebels as well. That character,
it definitely felt organic to the Star Wars universe they've built around the more recent non-movie properties. Pat, what did you think?
Yeah, it was all right. Not my favorite of the Star Wars movies, but it wasn't a bad movie.
And I think it took place early enough in Han Solo's life that I think they're down for a sequel, or at least linking this movie to the supposed Boba Fett prequel that they're thinking about doing.
He signed on to a 3-movie deal. They were, I think, going to maybe build this into something more. The Star Wars spinoff movies, as of the recording today, have been put on indefinite hold, which does not mean they're not going to happen, but it does mean they may have to kind of go back and reevaluate based on the performance, which is unfortunate because Star Wars is a pretty rich universe. I do want to see more of it, and this wasn't bad. But it obviously didn't do what they wanted it to do, so this is how things work.
Yeah.
Other movies that we have seen, I have not seen this, but I know BJ, you saw Hereditary.
Oh, Jesus.
Which is a horror thriller.
So Hereditary, I want to channel that character from Saturday Night Live. Was it, this movie had everything. Headless children, people set on fire, broken noses. It was really, really fucking good. I would say that this is around the lines of this generation's The Exorcist. It was produced by
A24, right?
Yes. Same company that did The Witch. So it's got kind of the last 15 minutes of the film are more classic, like Exorcist type horror, whereas the build is just so dreading and dreadful and creepy that, like, you know nothing's going to end well, and there's like at least two or three moments in the movie where they're just so dark and just so creepy. You didn't think they would, like, you know how in a movie where something bad happens and they just kind of clip to the next day? No, they keep going, and you're like, oh, this is upsetting. This is everything I don't want to see right now. But if you are a horror fan, you absolutely have to see this movie. It is absolutely phenomenal.
Good. Yeah. Well, I've heard good things. Got good reviews. Really, really good reviews. I saw the latest Riff Tracks installments. They did a riff on Space Mutiny, which if you are a Mystery Science Theater fan, you recognize from season like 10 or 11 or
oh,
something.
Lord.
Like the when they brought it back over to Sci-Fi or back when they brought it to Sci-Fi with Mike and Kevin and Bill, they did this, and then this same crew did this again as Riff Tracks, but with a whole new, you know, different set of jokes. But it was really good. It was really fun. Our friends Michael O'Quinn and Divine Grace and their assorted cadre were there, and it was a really it was just good to see Riff Tracks again. I haven't seen it in a while. But if you're not familiar, Riff Tracks is Mystery Science Theater. Some of the people doing it on their own. But also coming up in October, and really probably September through November, across the country, the new Mystery Science Theater cast, Jonah Hill, maybe Felicia Day, maybe? Aww. I don't know if she's touring. And then Joel Hodgson, the original, the first host, they're touring around doing a live show, whereas the Riff Tracks are all broadcast over like that Fathom.
Oh, Fathom event, yeah, yeah. Sort of thing. Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, if you're a big fan of either if you're a big fan of Mystery Science Theater, I highly recommend checking out the Riff Tracks events at your local theater and then see if the Mystery Science Theater is coming around to your neck of the woods. We have not seen The Incredibles 2 yet, but maybe by next time we will have. I know a lot of people were very excited about that, and I've heard good things. Let us move on to the television. There have been a lot of shows. Well, so since we last were with you, shows have ended. We have seen finales.
Yep.
Some have ended. We have not seen the finales. And some are starting up with the summer shows. In fact, one I'm excited about is Preacher. I always forget that is a summer show.
Same here. I always, like, I just finished season 2 the other day, and I'm like, oh, well, I guess I'll have to wait for season 3. And then I realize, oh, wait, no, it's happening, like, next month.
And yeah, I haven't watched season 2 yet.
Oof, it's good. It improves, I think, greatly on 1, but it's very rooted in the New Orleans area. So, and they shot, I believe, on location. So it's really cool to see that. And season 3 is largely set in Louisiana, but not New Orleans. So they are kind of rooting it and keeping it more of a Southern series, which the comic didn't stay there as much. It moved it around a lot more. So it's a different take on the material, but it's still pretty good. But that has not come out yet. But what has wrapped up, we saw the finale for The Flash.
Oh, yeah. That actually was pretty good.
I thought it was okay. I like the season arc overall. I very much enjoyed the sort of final moment of, oh, hey, it's this person who we've all seen throughout the season and pretty much knew probably who she was. But
and I loved that because I remember mentioning it when we talked about the she popped up in the crossover event at Barry and Iris's wedding. And I thought it was super weird because I'm like, who is this girl and why is she acting? At first I was like, why is she acting like Felicity from Arrow? But no, like as soon as she popped up, the second time she popped up, I'm like, okay, is she going to pop up? Are we going to find out who she is later?
You put the gun out there and they're going to use it. So yeah, I knew they were going to reveal her by the end, but I just didn't know how that all worked out.
I'm glad they waited. And they announced that the main antagonist for the next season is Cicada or Chimera. It's either Cicada or Chimera.
I don't know who either of those people are, but all right.
I bet they're a speedster.
No, they're not.
No, this season wasn't a speedster.
Uh-huh.
It was the thinker. And actually, I felt like even though, I mean, there were moments that were certainly kind of like treading water, the idea of it was sort of like, you know, let's help humanity by taking over and, you know,
or like,
rebooting everybody to...
Rebooting everyone to level one.
To like just... They can't think for themselves, so this guy's going to lead them and think for them kind of deal.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But in a way that, I'm not going to say it's believable, but in a way that sort of the motivation sort of made sense. And then the biggest joy of the season was Ralph Dibny for me.
Who's the series regular now?
He is, thank God. The Elongated Man, acted by someone who looks like a young Jim Carrey. Like,
yes.
Very obviously chosen because of his... probably like resemblance and
weird
sort of
facial expression,
yeah,
ability.
Like, think The Mask, think kind of ridiculous. Anyway, but still very funny and heartfelt in the way he merged with the whole team. But overall, like the ending did kind of just sort of happen. I didn't feel like it was as epic as and exciting as some of the endings they've done.
And also, I think they're finally going to address the fact that metahumans have been around before the particle accelerator. They've touched on it in previous seasons. where like there'll be a random character that has power, a villain that has powers. They stop him and they're like, wait a minute. He was here during the particles accelerator. How does he have powers? I'm like, yeah, why don't we answer that finally? And I guess they're actually going to answer that with the fact that somehow or another, Caitlin has always had the Killer Frost ability, even when she was a child.
That. Yeah.
So it had nothing to do with the particle accelerator. And hopefully they're going to lead into the fact that there's other metahumans out there and they don't have to always have an event to cause metahumans, which would make for a better story flow.
So the other thing they did with Harry, which is kind of cool, Harry being Harrison Wells, but from Earth 2, is they kind of played with his motivations and his intellect. And I like the arc overall, though it was kind of hokey in some parts.
He's normal now.
Yeah, normal-ish. He's kind of less smart, maybe, but still, he has more heart.
Yeah.
Pat, did you like the overall?
I mean, it was fine. I didn't hate it. It didn't seem as strong of a season as some of the other ones. But overall, I mean, it wasn't too bad.
So, we also have been watching Legion. Haven't watched the last episode, which evidently is satisfying, according to people I've talked to. If you're not watching this show and you're an X-Men fan, you may have tried the first season and it was a little out there for you and didn't really get to maybe the Legion that you're used to. I do think that they maybe had some notes from the studio or notes from somebody or whatever. This was their plan all along. This season, they definitely start to sort of show Legion that we might recognize. In fact, there is one scene where you see their version of what like Legion is in the comics. So it's still an amazing piece of television. Every episode just leaves my mouth on the ground. It's just so interesting the way they have shot it, the time frame. They play with alternate universes and time travel in this season. So it's a sci-fi show, but in a way that's so artistic and interesting. It doesn't just tell the story like a lot of the, like maybe the CW shows do. And it's very, very loosely tied to X-Men continuity, but in enough that you get like full-on Shadow King.
Yeah.
Farouk. Like the way you almost have seen him in the comics. So I definitely recommend checking that out. Also, the music is so good. It's synth, modular synth craziness that I just am all about. So Voltron, is that like the finale?
No.
Oh, okay.
I guess
I haven't watched the new season yet.
Ever since season 4 or 5, they started the shorter season format. So it's like 6 episodes instead of a full 12. This season, it's obvious, like if anything makes it obvious that the Legend of Korra, Avatar, Last Airbender team wrote this, because like when you think about the Last Airbender, it starts off very kind of lighthearted. The characters kind of are like, oh, we're gonna save the world, and then like season 2 or 3 comes around and they're like, I have PTSD now. Like it's the characters are like the story is in full like gun mode, and you have one episode that's really cute where the characters themselves are like, we need a break. And they have a cute little Dungeons and Dragons episode where Karan's the dungeon master and is very upset that one of the characters wants to be a paladin and he's already a paladin. So there's that one little respite, and then the rest of the season is just like nothing but like really big story moments. There's a lot of sacrifices. There's a really nice two sides of the same coin moment with Lotor and Allura. Yeah, it's really, really good. And they're actually giving us a ton of references from like all of the remakes, all of the side characters. They're giving us a lot of information like that they're staying true. They're somehow staying true to all of the original Voltron lore, like from the original anime. So
they're going to bring in the cars.
I would love an episode where somebody tries to build like the Go Voltron Go car Voltron. I would be all about that. But we'll see. Like the series could end right here and be all right, but I feel like they're going to do like at least one more season or two. So yeah, no, it's definitely, if you haven't started watching it, it's definitely worth it.
Well, I did watch, I think, the first season, and I really enjoyed it, so it's one of those things I need to get back to. So, this is season 6, you said?
Yeah, they're on season good. Six.
But they're shorter seasons.
Yeah, so. But four, at least four and five were only like six episodes. All right,
they're half hours.
And they were only like a couple months apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Queer Eye, speaking of Netflix shows, back with another set of episodes.
It's so good.
Yeah. So fantastic.
Although it's front loaded like it was the first time.
Oh, the better ones are up front?
Yeah.
Yeah. The for like episode one, they actually do a woman.
Yep.
And then I think episode three or four, they actually have a trans person that's fresh out of their top surgery. And the people are a lot different. Like everybody's vastly different. Like there's one person, they're like, "All right, you're being a shithead. You need to get your shit together."
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting to see how they interact with like.
Yeah, and
a diverse group.
The woman that they do, she actually has them make over, instead of her house, they make over the church's community hall.
Oh, that's lovely.
So then they deal with a lot of the whole gays versus religion and all of that.
And funny little shout out. Her son's gay, and he takes her son to the Atlanta Gay and Lesbian Chorus. So he can kind of find his group, his people, because he feels isolated in the town that they're in, and which is called Gay Georgia, and the director of the Atlanta Gay Chorus, Gay and Lesbian Chorus, is my chorus teacher from high school.
Get out!
And here's the funny thing: is I turned on that episode, I'm on my phone in bed, like it's like getting ready to wind down for the night. And I hear them singing a song, and I start to go back into the warm-ups, like just going through my head. And I'm like, why the fuck am I doing that now? And I, as soon as I look up, it says Robert, chorus director. And I'm like, Mr. Glore, what are you doing? What are you doing with your life?
That's fantastic.
I thought it was hilarious. I texted my sister because my sister like actually hangs out with him. And she's like, yeah, I don't know. Let me see. And she's like, yep. He's in the first episode.
Very cool.
So
I don't. This just came out, and I haven't watched it. Has anybody watched Cloak and Blagger?
Cloak and Blagger.
Words are hard. Cloak and Dagger.
Were you trying to say Cloak and Blacker?
Cloak and Blaster, and then it became Blagger because anyway. So Cloak and Dagger, which we saw a promo for at New York Comic Con last year, that little pop up shop they had. Anybody seen this yet?
Yes.
Okay. All of it.
No, I'm on episode three.
What channel is this
on?
It's
on Hulu.
Oh, it's Hulu.
It's on Freeform, which is like the ABC Family channel that Disney bought.
They got rid of the 700 Club?
Yeah.
Did they really though?
I think they did.
I don't think they did.
No, I think they actually
I think
did.
They had to keep it for a while.
No, I think the 700 Club actually got moved.
Oh, okay, good. That's good.
But it is phenomenal. I watched the first two episodes and I was speechless. The character development is amazing. They show the origin story like the first like 5-10 minutes of the first episode. And Tandy and Tyrone are like the perfect like flip side to each other. Tandy is a hot mess. And she's a hot mess in like all the best ways. She robs rich people. She doesn't really live anywhere. She's pretty much homeless. Tyrone lives in like a decent house. He goes to a private school and he just hates everything. Everything in his life is pretty much just a rope around his neck. It's amazing. It's really, really good how they like when they start developing their powers.
The criticism that I've heard is that they don't spend a lot of time together.
No.
So it's very separate, and then they eventually they build it up like that.
They're going to kind of actually get together and see how their powers coalesce together. But I actually like that. I actually like the fact that they're developing the character separately, and then you'll get to see how the characters interact later on. Just like the comics, Tandy's powers are a little bit more direct. His powers, he's like teleporting in drug dealers' trunks. He's like waking up on rooftops. He's subconsciously using his powers, not purposely fully. And he doesn't really know what the fuck's going on. So it'll be very interesting to see how when they actually link up, how she'll affect him and how he'll affect her powers.
So are all the episodes up?
I believe most of them are in fact up.
I didn't know because when Runaways aired, didn't they do like
They did an episode in a week.
They did the first two or three, like, right off the bat, and then it's once a week. So it's that same format because it's a freeform show.
Okay. And if you are enjoying Cloak and Dagger, I keep wanting to say Cloak and Blaster, our friend Dennis Hopeless is writing a web-based webcomic version of, I mean, not a version. He is writing those characters in a web-only comic right now with David Messina. Pat, have you checked that out yet?
Oh.
I had, like, kind of, we weren't sure what Hopeless was doing next. And when we talked to him in New York, I don't think he had announced, they hadn't announced it yet. But basically, yeah, it's, from what everything I've heard, it's really good. They will eventually publish it, like a lot of the web first they'll do, and then they'll put it out like a few months later. But I heard it's very good. So if you like those characters, then you should check it out. If you are excited about what we are doing here at Flame On and Nerdy Show, you can support us with Patreon. We do have a Patreon that we keep us kind of a little bit of money trickling in every now and again. If you go to patreon.com/nerdyshow, you can donate as little or as much as you want on a recurring basis, and you can actually say in the note, hey, I'm doing this because I like Flame On. It would give us a little extra cheddar, gives us some nice new equipment every so often.
I like cheese.
And we all like cheese. Or if you just want to see like what we're up to, give us a shout out, review us on iTunes or any of your other social media podcasting platforms. Those reviews, those stars, just those mentions really does help us keep spreading the word about us. And it really does, you know, make a difference. And we like hearing from you, too. So you want to find any of our social media presence, just go on flameonshow.com. And there's little chiclets, little tiny graphics at the bottom that tell you how to find us on all of your favorite social media platforms. And like I said, we like to hear from you. And if you have any people we should check out, new and up-and-coming artists, writers, your favorite TV show, or you want to, again, just throw some money, we have every way you can imagine to do that. So please go check that out. If you haven't seen our new logo by Danny Haas, you can go look at your artwork on this episode. And you'll see it. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, my God. I look at it every night before bed because I love it so much.
Getting a lot of great feedback for that. So we thank him and Pat for working on that and getting that out there. Yeah. So let's move on to what you're listening to. So we don't always do a music segment, but I decided very impromptu this morning on the car ride that we needed to maybe work this in because it's something we kind of always we all love music and we all like to listen to podcasts, really. So new segment, what are you listening to? Basically, what's your favorite album, podcast, thing you're going to do? And we'll just kind of go around. This is not meant to supplement our things that are giving us life, but it is sort of a nice opportunity to discuss music and podcasts.
Like a book on tape or...
Book on tape. Very nice. Book on tape. I have several.
Get your Audible plug in.
Old. We could probably
please
get that,
please spell
actually. To us. They give it to every show.
So, you like books?
I will briefly say that there is an artist that I want you to know about. His name is Lawrence Rothman. You've maybe heard of him. I don't know. He was at Moog Fest this past May up in... Durham, North Carolina. I was up there. I only heard about him after missing his performance, but Jonathan West from Nerdy Show went and saw that performance in a church in Durham as part of Moog Fest and said it was amazing. And then I've listened to a lot of his music since then. He's got some really interesting vocal like sounds that are kind of like, it almost sounds like someone who's been pitch shifted, but it's his voice. And his songs are, the lyrics are kind of interesting. There's one that's called Geek, and it's him basically coming out as a geek to someone who he thinks is being picked on. I mean, it's kind of a neat little story. I think if you're interested in new music, you're going to find this guy a little interesting. He's got some other crazy song lyrics and song titles, but not heavily electronic, but some. And I think he's going to be a bigger thing in the future. He's definitely got that potential. So Lawrence Rothman, The Book of Law is his album out right now. And in podcasting, I am kind of ongoingly looking for new podcasts. I did get recommended My Favorite Murder. You guys ever heard of that?
I have heard of it.
Yeah. So I'm very early in the episodes. I think it's interesting because it is true crime. In fact, true like murder. But with a very comedic twist because the two hosts are very funny.
Oh.
And
dark comedy. I'm all there.
Yeah, kind of dark comedy, but very conversational. So evidently its show is pretty well received. It's doing they're doing tours. I mean, it's a whole big thing. And of course, we've mentioned just real quickly Sibling Rivalry. If you haven't already checked that out, that's the other show that I've been really enjoying, which is the Bob the Drag Queen and Monet Exchange podcast. They're kind of slow to put episodes out. I think they're like maybe every couple weeks. It feels infrequent.
Sorry that one of them is on a current season and has to tour.
I'm just saying they Skype, they make it work. I mean, you know, it's yeah, I know she's busy.
From such two demanding opposite coasts.
But they
you have a 3-hour time difference.
They do an amazing job. If you have a chance, go look them up on YouTube and just see like what you could do with a video podcast when you're not in the same space. It's pretty cool.
Look up The Only Productions on YouTube.
So yeah, those two are my shows I would recommend right now, and album I think is exciting. BJ, what do you got?
Actually, because I can never do anything completely correct, it's a video game, I believe it's on Steam, it's called, Just Shapes and Beats. It's kind of a music-based sort of, survival shooter, game, and it's all synth and techno-based, and they have a whole bunch of, different artists. There is a Spotify playlist for Just Shapes and Beats. The first single, Chronos by Zeph. The album's called Parallel Processing, is a really good song, and it's boss battle music for one of the stages. So no, it's like I haven't been able to, I watched some friends play the game, and I have not been able to stop listening to this playlist. So if you're into a lot of synth and techno, there's a lot of bit, there's like a lot of
chip
bit music, chip tunes. There's a ton of that. It's a really fun game too. So if you check on Steam, Just Shapes and Beats. It's also a party. You can do a co-op, couch co-op. It's a party game. And the other thing, one of the things I've been listening to that I'm waiting for the fourth season to come out is, the Black Tapes podcast.
Wait, did we already talk about this?
I think we talked about it one time on the cast.
So you may not have been here, but yeah, did you ever finish it?
No, I was like halfway through the third season.
So they are coming back, but we don't know when.
We're not sure when. They did announce on their Twitter that they are doing a fourth season.
Fucking better, because let me tell you, the end of season 3 is total bullshit.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, they just kind of stop. Anyway, spoilers. So yeah, Black Tapes is great. I really like that show.
Yep. And those are my things.
Eric?
So, I've been listening to Carly Rae Jepsen of Call Me Maybe fame, her album Emotion, and I recently also picked up Emotion B-sides, because there were so many songs she had ready to go that she had to cut a lot from releasing the album, so she released a follow-up, and also has... what is it? Cut to the Feeling, which was featured as a lip sync for your life track.
And then an amazing viral video.
Yes, for Pride Month. Circle it all back around to Pride.
That's how we get you.
By one of Lady Gaga's backup dancers. And so if you search for the hashtag Cut to the Feeling Friday, you'll see a couple of awesome Instagram videos. Very rainbow. Very much. And as far as on the podcast front, I've been listening to Los Culturistas, which are two flamboyant theater adjacent gays up in New York who talk to a lot of different people in the entertainment industry. Their most recent episode had an interview with Darcy, I can't remember her last name, but plays Janet on The Good Place.
Aww.
And their claim to fame segment is I Don't Think So, Honey, in which they each take a minute to rail against something that's going on.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love.
Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
In pop culture, well, continually saying, "I don't think so, honey." And they've turned that into live shows where...
Of course they have.
Which is pretty fantastic.
Good job for them. Pat?
And just if you want to go see that video, it's Mark Kanemura is the backup dancer that did the video. He is at MKIK808 on Twitter. It's a fantastic video. I want to do that umbrella trick. That's my favorite part of it.
Oh, have you seen the second one with the myriad of wigs?
No.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic.
For music, I'm going to go local because I went and saw him perform last weekend and have actually gone back and cut up and made my own live album of his from his performance at Parliament House at my event in May, I believe it was. At Singlet de Mayo.
Yes. Our, that was
our May 5th event. Fergasm event, and that is Sean Holcomb. He is Orlando born and raised, singer-songwriter, very country, rock, folk, kind of some pop sensibilities thrown into a country rock blender, and it works. But he has an album out on all the platforms called South of the South. He just set off on a tour with Caitlin Rushing called Something along those lines tour. And actually, it's his birthday today as we're recording it. So I didn't even realize that it was his birthday when I started cutting up all the tracks into individual tracks. And have been listening to it. And great voice. He's a super cool guy. I think he's going to do wonders in the world of music. So go check him out. It's Sean Holcomb, H-O-L-C-O-M-B. And as far as podcasts, I'm going to give shout-outs to two friends. First is Jody Koenig of Bearskin. He and I can't remember the guy's name. See, he's the guy that that created Chubster, which is a fashion and lifestyle website for bigger guys. They have come together to do a podcast that drops every Tuesday called Heavy Conversation. They are 4 episodes and a trailer, and the trailer is the kind of getting to know the hosts episode. It's only about 3 or 4 minutes. Each episode runs roughly 29-30 minutes, so they're fairly quick listens, and they cover different topics in each one. This last one was dating while fat. They go over topics that basically apply to guys of size, and actually, and I mean, anyone who's a bit heavier can really kind of take away some of these tips, whether you are male or female or anything in between, and just kind of like get that advice from people who are dealing with it.
Bruce and Jody.
Bruce, that's it. They sound very much alike on the show, which is tough.
Oh, boy.
But it's not in such a way that, like, there's not really much that they talk about that you would need to have distinguishing voices. But there are times when I'm like, wait a minute, which one of them is talking right now? And I love Jody, but most of my correspondence with Jody is through Facebook, so I'm not so used to his voice. So it's sometimes, you know, it's tough, and I'm like, wait a minute, which? Oh no, he's talking about a partner. Okay, that's Jody, because Bruce is straight and Jody is gay. So it's a very interesting dynamic. When I saw Chubster, I was like, oh okay, two homosexuals doing this, and then it was like, he's like, I have a wife, and I was like, okay, cool. All right. So if you are a heavy set person or somebody on the plusser size of life, and you want to hear some other takes on how to approach dressing and dating and all of these other things, check out Heavy Conversation. The other one is friend and listener of the show, Luke Kerr, who does two podcasts that I'm going to start dipping my toes into. One has been going on for a while, and that is Daytime Confidential, because, you know, if it's about stories, I'm here. The only thing is that it's all the stories. Not that there are a lot of soaps left on daytime television, but it's tough when you only watch one out of like four or five to really kind of, you know, want to listen to the whole thing because you're only knowing about a small portion of it. But the other one is Geek Confidential, which is a relatively new one that he is doing. It's only about 51 episodes in, 52, somewhere in that area. And one of the ones that I saw when I first subscribed was the top five mothers in comics. And it was just, it's kind of fun. They do these little interesting conversations. So I'm going to start dipping my toes into that and probably fall down a rabbit hole of listening to a lot more stuff from beginning to end. Not the two, you know, the 1200 episode one, because that's a lot of time and I don't got that much time.
Side note, I feel like Guys of Size would be a really good band name.
Nice.
Or our calendar we could make for our Patreon subscribers.
You going to lead that effort?
Yes.
Or I'll be very mad at that.
Oh, he will, but he's not here to poo-poo it down, so.
It's true. It's his loss. So let's move on to comics. We'll keep this light, but there's a few books that have been pretty exciting, and I actually got
and
caught up.
And there's going to be spoilers, because yes. Fuck this. There are two things that I need to talk about, and I don't give a fuck. If you haven't read some X-Men and some Thor, then you might want to skip and come back when you do, because I have some feelings about Thor number one.
Do you have issues?
I got a whole goddamn magazine rack.
Ooh.
So, let's start with DC. Indie, I should admittedly know a little bit more indie stuff right now, because I just came from Heroes Con. I don't.
I mean, Power Rangers Shattered Grid is still pretty fucking amazing.
Good.
So
good. It's good. We're going to skip any. So, but that's good. DC, Batman's getting married. There is a new issue. Actually, the issue, I think, in my my poll this week. Haven't read it.
That's the end of the Best Man arc.
Oh, okay. Look thicker. So I wouldn't
know. They're not getting married until 4th of July.
Well, that makes sense. I don't know. But that's exciting. That's coming up. Tom King's been killing it.
And listen, they wouldn't put it's DC and Marvel are doing enough of the same thing. They wouldn't put their wedding issue out the same day as Marvel's.
I feel like sometimes they do. But other Tom King, you got caught up on Mr. Miracle?
Yep, read all 9 issues.
And I'm curious what you thought.
It's good. I mean, Tom King's a great writer. I don't know what the fuck is going on half the time.
But I mean, that's kind of the shtick of the story. It's you don't know what's going on. You just know that there is this...
I get that part of it. Like, the way that the issues start and end are always kind of weird. I do find it funny that they end each issue like a 1960s television show.
It's the No, it's the original Kirby.
Oh, that's, well, that's a 1960s why. Comic.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't read original Kirby, so I don't know these things, but it made me feel like the end of every same bat time, same bat channel.
It's totally Mr. Miracle, and it didn't occur to me. I wouldn't have noticed until someone pointed out. The original Mr. Miracle comics, the way Kirby did that, they're lining it up. But it's totally a new story. It's totally new art. It touches on themes of like midlife and parenting and relationships and work-life balance and like meetings and bureaucracy. Like, it's like kind of crazy amazing how this 41-year-old sort of like, you know, feels a lot of sympathy for Mr. Miracle in a lot of ways that aren't super heroic, but in the midst of his superheroics. So it's really good. So that's still going. That's great. Man of Steel from Brian Michael Bendis and Varied Artists is ongoing. It's good. I don't know that it's as Bendis-y as you'd think it might be, but that's okay. And this last, third issue, I haven't read the fourth one. It really starts to turn up the heat on Superman and Supergirl and like, shit's gonna happen in the next episode or issue, so it's been pretty good. Anybody else reading that? No. Okay. Justice League number one. I do want to mention this. Justice League number one, written by Scott Snyder, coming right off of his Metal run, doing probably one of the best Justice League like regroups I've read in years. Probably not since Brad Meltzer rebooted Justice League, probably like 7 or 8 years ago. It's got the classic lineup, but it's got many other characters that are sort of ancillary, and it's getting back to the core idea of Justice League versus the Legion of Doom.
Oh. So are there still like three separate teams of Justice League people?
They're going to do something like that, but the core book is all of them.
Oh, so there are separate books for...
They're doing like Justice League, outer space, cosmic, whatever.
Yeah, because they're coming in off of Metal.
Well, Metal and
No Justice.
With all the ramifications of that and everything.
But this is the core Justice League book that is the one I'm excited about. The other ones I might pick up, I might check out. Art is pretty awesome.
By Mark Morales and Jim Chung.
Jim Chung, who doesn't typically do DC, but is gonna, he did at least the first issue, and I think Mark Morales is picking up after.
And he did the cover.
Oh, and the cover, yeah, the cover's great. So no, and the key thing here, honestly, Snyder knows that at its core, Justice League is all about Martian Manhunter. And if you get Martian Manhunter in your Justice League mix, many, many successful runs, that's who drives it, including the Grant Morrison run from back in the early 2000s, which is another one of my favorites. But this is the book, this is the relaunch that puts Justice League back at the center of DC, which is where it should have been for years, and it's just drifted away. So I'm very excited about it. Flash Wars, I haven't been keeping up with.
So I haven't really, I've kind of been on the periphery of most of the DC books. But I picked up the kind of prologue to this. So you've got original Wally West, freshly pulled from the Speed Force during was it Flash Rebirth?
No, or is it was the DC Rebirth.
DC Rebirth
or whatever they called it. Yeah.
So you've got him freshly pulled from the Speed Force. And Hunter Zolomon decides to just show up and lets Wally. Wally, I'm gonna call him Wally Light because he's the white one.
Can we go with new or young or old Wally? I mean,
I'm gonna go with Wally Light. Hunter Zolomon approaches him and somehow reignites his memories of when he was in the Speed Force, which apparently he had children. He had a family, and now they just don't exist anymore. So it's kind of given him, Hunter Zolomon, like, keep in mind, this is Hunter Zolomon, has kind of gotten Wally, the idea in Wally's head that he needs to get his family back, and the only way for him to do that is to break the Speed Force.
The awkward kids?
Yes.
Yeah. Nobody likes Wally's kids.
No. No. I'm not upset that they don't exist anymore. But Wally, of course, is like, I'm gonna break the Speed Force. Barry is like, that's Hunter Zolomon. Why would you think anything he says is a good idea? So you've got kind of this grieving father, kind of versus Barry Allen, and it's kind of leading the way, because I know there's another Flash book coming up, which could potentially be Wally West's own Flash book.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
You're more up on DC than I am. Wow, I didn't know about that.
But yeah, so that's where we're at, and that's pretty much the current Flash War, is him, is Wally's trying to get his family back, and Barry is being the good slash mediator of balance, like, don't do that thing, that's a bad thing. So we'll see how that plays out.
And I believe Josh Williamson is doing that right now.
Yes.
And is killing it. He has definitely been one of the stronger Flash writers in quite some time, so I'm very happy to hear that's still good.
It got me. I've been out of the Flash book for a really long time, and this is kind of pulling me back in.
Good. Now, let's move on to Marvel. This is any other DC stuff, but I don't think there is. Eric is making a face that says no. Marvel's been getting better. I think overall things are starting to heat up again, and maybe we're getting some new talent.
They're
some
stabilizing.
Returning talent, yeah. I know I for sure have been enjoying certain books, including Marvel's 2-in-1, which is basically the Fantastic Four, but only two of them, or the two original, like, two of the original, I should say, Human Torch and, The Thing, combined with alternate universe versions of Reed and Sue, along with the Invincible Iron Man? No, yeah, the Doctor Doom Iron Man.
Infamous.
Infamous. Thank you. And then the alternate universe Doom equivalent. So in this alternate universe that they go to for the first like 5 or 6 issues, Doom has become Galactus. Of course. Why not, right? It happens.
I mean, he was a Beyonder in the previous big story arc, so
he's had some power, right? It works. But like, seriously, another book, I think, by Jim Chung, just so good. Like, Chip Zdarsky is not known. He's a writer. He's not known for writing a lot of different, like, Marvel comics. He's done a few things. He's doing Spider-Man. He's done Howard the Duck. But, like, this is a book that is a love letter to the Fantastic Four and is kind of working its way towards bringing the other parts of the Fantastic Four back. But I'm quite okay if he stays on this book for the foreseeable future. And even though Dan Slott is going to be doing the relaunch of Fantastic Four, I am excited about this storytelling that Chip's doing, and I understand it's going to keep going. So yeah, I don't know, Fantastic Four, if you're a fan and you're not getting enough, because right now there's not a whole lot, check out Marvel's 2-in-1. Lockjaw did just wrap up. That was a beautiful 4-issue series, and I mean beautiful in more of the storytelling. The art was a little all over the place. There were different artists on different books or different issues, but man, Lockjaw and D-Man, such a good pairing. No one would have ever thought, except the writer.
I did not sign up for a book that was going to hit me all up in the feelings when I picked up a book about a giant inhuman teleporting dog. But they solidified Lockjaw's origins, because that was the one thing that was never 100% stated anywhere, was whether or not he was a human that went through pterogenesis and became a dog, or if he was a dog that somehow gained inhuman powers. And they have finally confirmed that his mother was a dog that was experimented on and went through a whole bunch of like procedures in order to basically be a guinea pig for inhuman technology. And yeah, Lockjaw knew that his siblings were going to be killed because he was the only one that exhibited like these powers that they wanted. And so he teleported them all away and then, you know, stayed there behind.
Can I mention this author? Because he's fairly new to comics, at least Marvel. Daniel Kibblesmith. Okay. Not a household name that most people probably know. He is a staff writer for the Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
Huh.
Has written, an Emmy nominated writer probably for that, has written for Valiant and Heavy Metal. And comedy for New Yorker, McSweeney's and The Onion, and Funny or Die. And he is the author of a book called Santa's Husband.
Aww.
Surprising no one based on what he wrote about D-Man. I don't know that he is gay. It says here he lives in New York with his favorite author, Jennifer Wright. So I don't know if he is or not, is not gay. But seriously, does a good job with handling the gay character of D-Man.
That was, and then him learning to at least find a little bit of redemption in himself. That whole storyline, that first issue still.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, Doc Joe.
All up in the feelings.
But yeah, no, Daniel Kibblesmith is definitely one of these writers that I really want to see come back and do more.
And D-Man got a dog out of the whole thing.
D-Man did. Didn't he get like a little Lockjaw brother?
Yes.
Oh, Lockjaw's siblings are adorable.
Doc Jaw.
That's just, I don't know. So let's talk Pat's contentious and or favorite moments in Marvel, including but not limited to X-Men Gold number 30, which did just come out. So again, spoilers here.
Oh, we spoiling the hell out of this. You got a day and a half, 2 days, 3 days, depending on when you start listening to this. This drops at midnight Friday morning, 2 days after new comics come out. So if you haven't read X-Men Gold number 30, then you need to skip ahead. Or come back, pause it, go read it, and then come back.
I don't read don't see the variant cover.
No, it's in a polybag. You can't see it unless you buy it and open it.
Well, don't do that either if you want to be.
Or if you've read any articles about it, the New York Times apparently spoiled it Tuesday night.
Yep.
I understand now why, and I definitely was surprised. It wasn't the theory I had because I thought it was something that was more. I don't know.
And this wasn't contentious. I'm fine with this one actually.
No, this is good. I meant to look up, well, please talk, I'm going to look up who did the art, because that is something we got to talk about.
So, we've spent the last 10 to 12 issues, I want to say, basically dealing with Kitty and Peter. It actually might even be a little bit more than that, but it feels like 14 years. about the last dozen or so issues dealing with their relationship. Do they still have feelings for each other? Do they not still have feelings for each other? I still think he should get back with Domino. That's just me. That him and Domino in that X-Force book, that was written very well. I think they should have been together.
It was great.
But they basically eventually came around to, yes, we have feelings for each other. They were put into dangerous situations. Kitty proposed. Okay, they got through all that. Then it's a matter of, oh, now we're in jail. Oh, now we're in space. Oh, now they've kidnapped Colossus. Oh, now they want to use him to restart the legacy virus. Oh, now we got him back. Oh, now we're going on bachelor parties and bachelorette parties in the wedding issue. Or the wedding special that didn't house the wedding in it. And we make it to X-Men number 30, which is the big wedding of the century that Marvel has teased since last year? The end of last year? Around the time Legacy came out and all this?
End of last year.
So we get to the beautiful Vista, and Ileana plants some words of doubt into Kitty's head. Peter is steadfast in his love. They get to the rabbi, exchange vows. Kitty puts the ring on Peter's finger. Peter goes to put the ring on Kitty's finger, and his hand goes right through it.
That was amazing.
And then she cries, says, I can't do this, and phases through the ground and out. They basically come to an agreement that they are not sure where they stand right now. They love each other. They don't know if they can do this. They cut to the reception of the, or the would-be reception, I think is how they called it, where the X-Men are all there basically saying, oh, I feel bad, I feel bad. Storm's like, maybe it was fortunate. They're all like, what?
I love Storm so much.
She's like, you know, if a hoe don't want to be a hoe, you can't make her be a hoe, so whatever.
And marriage isn't for everyone.
Exactly. Hoeing ain't easy. And so then they're talking to, I think Storm is talking to Remy and says that, you know, you need that that hunger, that love needs that hunger, that you need to want to be with that person or not want to spend a day away from that person. And it has Gambit in focus with the soft focus of Rogue in the background. And then the next panel is soft focus on Remy and Rogue in focus. And he gets up and makes this statement of, I don't want a day to go by where I'm not with her. And then goes over to Rogue and gets down on one knee and proposes. And Kitty and Colossus give their blessing to go ahead and make it official. And we now have Mr. and Mrs. X, Rogue and Gambit, get married at the end of this issue.
And they got a free wedding. let's be clear.
True.
Let's be completely clear. The two ex-cons stole a wedding. They stole a wedding.
They did.
It was just like Mamma Mia.
Oh, Lord.
But that's... So the last 14 years of build-up for this wedding, just to have a different couple get married. And honestly, I'm a little more invested in Rogue and Gambit.
So, yeah, because their previous little miniseries was actually really good.
It was. And it they haven't been together for so long in the comics that you kind of...
You're over it?
Yeah, you could have just kind of like dismissed it. And then they did that four-issue miniseries, and it really did make you feel like, okay, like, I can understand this. What I didn't get, and what killed me, is that Rogue and Gambit have just as messy of a history.
Seriously.
And their vows, or not their vows, their, oh God, what did Remy say?
His affirmation.
Yes, his affirmation. And Rogue's to his, basically... was exactly what Kitty and Peter were talking about, yet they're going to go through with it. And I'm like, and then they even showed a shot of them. I half expected them to get up and do a double wedding and be like, you know what? They're right.
That would be fun.
You know, because Rogue's like, I'll always find my way back to you. And it's like, hi, this is what this whole thing has been about for these two.
Right.
And then these other two who are even more fucked up are now getting married, but
so you
whatever.
You know, here's something interesting. According to Bleeding Cool, now let's preface this with "According to Bleeding Cool."
Which writer on Bleeding Cool?
Rich.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
but that's a little better.
Unnamed sources. Yeah, it is. It was Marvel Editorial's idea to do this. They were the ones who said, "Let's not marry these two. Let's marry Rogue and Gambit. So
honestly, I'm not mad about
it. That's a solid call. I don't hate
this. It's interesting, and Guggenheim was very upfront. The writer of X-Men Gold, he's like, look, I work for this company. They didn't tell me what to do. I, you know, it's whatever. It wasn't necessarily my idea, but I'll write it. And he made it pretty good. I will say, of the X-Men Gold, I have not cared for this series whatsoever. I think it's pandering and bullshit most of the time. The art by David Marquez. David Marquez is an amazing, amazing artist. Mostly working with Bendis in the last few years, but literally a powerhouse to be reckoned with. Super nice guy, too. I actually met him at Heroes a few years ago, and just, like, super nice. Every time he saw me, he was like, hey, how's it going? Like, super, super nice guy, but immensely talented. You know, they did an amazing job on this issue. It did everything it needed to. It was beautiful, touching. It touched on themes of real life and relationships and everything. It was good. It was good.
Do you think Kurt's still going to propose to Rachel?
Oh, God, now I don't know. But I still think...
No blue babies.
It makes sense. So Mr. and Mrs. X is going to be written by Kelly Thompson, famous for some Hawkeye work, but also Jem and the Holograms. She was the one who brought Jem and the Holograms back to the comic.
Oh, that first run of Jem and the Holograms?
Image?
IDW.
IDW. Oh. So, very well-liked writer, up-and-coming, and she's going to take that on. So, good for her.
I don't want to pick that up.
Very exciting. So,
and that was what Mr. and Mrs. X is, the X-classified book that they've been soliciting for the last couple of months, that they kept hidden and would not tell you what the book was. And retailers such as our friend Aaron had to blindly order because it was classified.
Which probably will work out okay, although I don't like the title necessarily. But anyway. So what's going on with Thor number one?
Right. So picking up from where the mighty Thor ended, Thor Odinson is now back as being Thor. He has a gold arm. I don't think they still have talked about where that came from. He just kind of ended the one series with one arm and then was back in Avengers number 1 and 2 with a gold arm.
I think Rocket got it for him.
And he stole it from C-3PO.
Thank you. Oh. Thank you. Oh. Good.
Which
good
is why C-3PO now has a red arm.
Go team. Good job.
Wow.
I'm leaving.
That was exactly right. That was improv and beautiful and just yes and amazing. Good job, Eric.
So, he has a cold arm. So, Asgardia blew up. The remaining Asgardians are now being basically relocated for the time being and being shepherded by Roz and Jane. Now that she's alive and getting treated for cancer. We didn't spoil that in the last time we talked about it. At the end of the series, okay? When she died, she was at the gates of Valhalla, and basically Thor used every bit of magic with Odin and Freya and brought her back to life.
She's still got cancer.
Consequences.
She still has to deal with her cancer, so she's got to get treatment and all that stuff, but whatever. So they're dealing with that. Thor is being tasked with, when Asgardia blew up, the Asgardian magic artifacts have all spread amongst the 10 realms. So he's basically going and being a collector.
So he has to collect the cloud cards?
Got to catch them all.
You mean he's got to put the 13 ghosts back in the box?
Does that mean he gets his little character? Who's the guy from that? The little beast? I forgot his name. The little kitty bird thing.
For some reason, I want to say Karibo, but it's not.
No.
That's from Yu-Gi-Oh.
Anyway, sorry. Sorry. Anime moment. We're good.
And he's living on a houseboat in Jersey.
Makes
random
sense.
Sure, why not,
with Thori as his guard dog.
That I do like that.
Aww. I love Thori. Yeah, and great. Tooth Gnasher was unceremoniously killed by the Mangog, but the other goat is also on the boat with Thori and Thor.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Thor and his pets. Where's Throg? Frog Thor. He's not a pet though.
Throg?
Is it Throg?
Yeah, it's Throg.
Oh, Throg 4. Okay.
Throg is also in the Lego Marvel Super Heroes 2 game.
He is?
I unlocked him. Yes.
Are all the pet adventures in that game?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Just Throg.
Is Lockheed?
Yes.
Spider-Man?
Oh, no. Lockheed, no. Oh. Lockjaw, yes. Lockheed, no. There's no X-Men universe.
Oh, okay.
In that, in the two.
That would make sense.
Yeah. So anyway, so back to Thor. So he is going after this artifact, and it is in a cave with the like priests or wizards of Sidorak. And he is out on the, like, he gets to the end of this ledge. They won't let him leave, or, you know, they're chasing him down. And they send their final attack person after him. And, of course, if you're talking about Sidorak,
it's the Juggernaut.
The
bitch.
Unstoppable Juggernaut.
Oh.
He's back. He's more powerful than ever. They fight. Vendelheim? What is the
Vanaheim. The realm?
Yes. Yep. Oh, no, where it was
singer?
It was in Ragnarok also, where the hammer's made.
Oh, yeah, where the
where the dwarves make the hammers.
Yeah,
and the weapons.
Right.
Yeah.
What about it?
No, well, the name of it, it's...
I don't know.
Narnahelm or something like that, whatever. So, he's basically... Thor is in contact with the dwarf. He's making hammers. So, he sends him a hammer, and he goes to use it on the Juggernaut, and it breaks. So then he's like, I need another hammer.
Another.
And he's like, which one or how many? And he's like, all of them. So literally just rains down hammers.
It's Niflheim.
And then he basically just summons lightning and just has them all attack the Juggernaut at one time.
So he just electrocutes the Juggernaut in a pool?
No. Yeah. Oh. It's a swirl of hammers.
It worked
and,
for Deadpool.
Right, well, you know.
Oh.
So like Odin is making like enchanting all these hammers, and it's kind of funny seeing him like have to go through all this with these hammers, and because he doesn't have Mjolnir, and the Uru that they had I guess wasn't good enough. So then one of the trolls is gonna go try to get him some Uru, and so that's like that's basically like the first story, but then we get a second story.
Ooh.
We're picking up from the Mighty Thor at the Gates of Valhalla, the second story that Ramon Perez drew, where Old King Thor has recreated Earth and made people again, basically became God, created the Earth, created humans again, and you had Jane, and as the first woman,
Eve, yeah,
and she's on her deathbed, and his three granddaughters are there. They've been out trying to capture this last of the space sharks and all this. So then eventually he has to go there. They know something is wrong, but he won't tell them what it is. He goes into space, and basically at this point, in like all the little thought bubbles and captions or whatever, the universe is dying. And by the universe is dying is basically the universe is dead, and it's just catching up to them now. So he flies as far as he can, reaches the end of the universe.
The source wall?
And
no, but yes.
On the final page, you get a hey, bub. It's goddamn Wolverine as the fucking Phoenix at the end of the universe.
Of course. That makes total sense.
Is there a restaurant there?
No, but there really should be.
I mean,
I
honestly,
appreciate that again.
The Phoenix got dumped by Jane. Why not hook up with the dude? Jane dumped.
Why
it's the perfect relationship?
Why does Wolverine have to be everywhere?
It is kind of a ridiculous conceit, and I will tell you
he has the space stone now. Makes sense.
What's his name? Who's writing this? Jason Aaron.
Yeah,
has written Wolverine as. I mean, he's one of the really good writers of Wolverine.
But this is a ridiculous, ridiculous fucking thing.
It is.
And on the shelf at a comic shop, they have these little tags for some of the books, and it was like, if you weren't thinking about checking out this book, take a look at the last page and you'll reconsider. And I told Oral, I'm glad I didn't pick it up and read the last page because I would have put it back down and reconsidered buying it.
Oh, no. First
I
would have
still bought it.
The artwork
but still.
Of the second half is Christian Ward, who just came off Black Bolt. His stuff is crazy awesome, painted, like cosmic, like just beautiful. Definitely worth doing. And Jason Aaron is an amazing writer. Old King Thor is great. It is, by the way, BJ, Nidavellir, whatever whatever the one is in the movie, it's the same one.
Nidavellir.
Oh, yeah, it's the same. That's
it's that realm.
Yeah.
But in the movie Avengers Infinity War, it's supposed to be like a world or a sun. In the Marvel continuity, it's a whole realm, but it's supposedly like at the same level of Midgard.
Oh yeah, but the Marvel cinematic has been more weird cosmic about showing the different realms.
Absolutely.
They're really just worlds.
They are. Yeah. So Nidavellir is where they make the hammers. So I love this. I mean, I read I kind of flew through it. The art style of the first half, I'm not a huge fan of that artist. It's different, but I don't think it works.
I wasn't a fan of the art.
It doesn't work as well. But the Christian Ward stuff is phenomenal. I love Christian Ward. So good. Marvel's doing some good stuff. Anything else with the Marvel? I think we're covering all the bases. There's all kinds of other crazy X-Men stuff that we'll just...
Amazing Spider-Man 800 came out, which was a big change up to a lot of the stuff going on.
Dan Slott
is leaving the book. We had a big somewhat final showdown between Peter and Norman.
Again.
But this time he was the Red Goblin with the Carnage symbiote, because he hasn't had that yet. Symbiote. The interesting thing, though, is that Peter ended up killing the Carnage symbiote while it was somewhat still attached to Norman, and now he has gone beyond Bug Nerds crazy and thinks that Peter is the Green Goblin and that he has to kill him. So he still has to kill Peter, but Spider-Man is no longer part of the equation in his brain. Normie is okay, question mark. He may or may not still have a little chunk of the Carnage symbiote in him. So that's going to be a thing to deal with. Octavius and Peter have finally met now that Octavius is somewhat resurrected, and they have a quote-unquote understanding, and he has built himself a new body and is it's kind of like a Venom thing. He's on the West Coast, and he just won't do evil.
Oh, but he's sort of good.
No, he's not Doc Ock.
Okay. So he's something else.
Yeah. But he's
basically, now that he knows who Peter is, Spider-Man, they've come to a truce, and he helped save,
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
And he also teaches at the university headed by the old company that, was it Horizon?
Horizon, yeah.
Horizon, yeah. He teaches at Horizon University.
From Epcot.
So,
lots of orange. So,
yeah, it's interesting how just where they kind of put all the characters and everything. No word on Miles, but, yeah.
They'll bring him back. So... we've reached the time in our show. We do our one up of the week. We'll try to make this quick because we have run a little long. BJ, what you got?
Actually, I gotta say, it's anime this time around. My Hero Academia season 3 is, we're right in the middle of it. They've just introduced the big bad for part of the series. He's horrifying, and it's really, really, really good. If you haven't picked it up, or if you haven't watched any of it. It's definitely, probably the first 3 episodes are a slow build, but from there on, it's just a really, really good series. There's a lot of ideals thrown around on what it means to be a hero. I mean, should you even be paid to be a hero? There's a lot of questions on what makes a hero, what makes a vigilante, and how do you do this all within the realms of actual law? So yeah, no, it's really interesting. The main character is a puppy in human form. So you can't help but root for him. And all the side characters are fantastic. So
excellent.
My Hero Academia.
Eric?
My what up is Leslie Jones's Twitter account, because she has very recently discovered the amazingness that is RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, about time.
And she is binge watching and just live commenting the heck out of it.
I was going to say, is it live tweeting if you're watching it like 4 years later?
But if you've ever seen her show up on Late Night with Seth Meyers when they recap Game of Thrones, when they watch it together, it's very similar to that, because she posts little videos of while she's watching and just her going off on all the contestants. She's most recently watched season 5. And it was just hilarious. The queens are tweeting back at her, so it's fantastic. She's going to be starting season 6 soon, so she's going to, Discover Bianca.
Oh, I want to. I need to like put a little favorite on that on her Twitter account so I get notified because that's gonna be fun.
Yes, but she's fantastic, and you should all follow her.
Pat,
two quick things. One, I ordered unicorn snot.
Yay!
I'm excited.
Delicious.
You're going to be the glitterati.
I broke down and couldn't find a Splenda Daddy, so I just went ahead and bought it for myself. So we'll see
it
how that...
It just cost two punches. Two platters punches, that's all.
Oh, and the shipping is... Oh, no, it's free shipping. Because I also... So for those of you who don't know, Unicorn Snot is a company that uses holographic glitter in skincare products. Including lip gloss and sunblock, which I ordered a tube of, I think, the blue glitter sunblock, which should hopefully be in a couple of days, and I'll get to try that out, and we'll see how that goes, and I will shimmer like a goddess in Provincetown during Bear Week, and there may be times where I just put it on just to go hang out. Even if I'm not going to be, you know, it'll be nighttime. I'll still be shimmering like a goddess. And, I ordered another thing that'll go into my second quick thing. I ordered, the glitter, like lip gloss, like lip covering. It's not the lip gloss. It's actual like glitter, like not lipstick, but it's a glitter, like lip coating. I forget what they call it. For the employee turnabout at the Parliament House, which takes place on July 18th, and I figure I will get it out now. So if you are in the Orlando area or Orlando adjacent, and you would like to see what I look like as a lady.
If you go on RuPaul Season 10, you can see Calorie Kardashian.
No.
Basically get the idea.
No.
The lady.
No. So July 18th, 8 p.m. at the Footlight Theater at the Parliament House. $5 suggested donation is the usual go-to. We raise money for the Joy MCC Food Bank. I will say that this year, this turnabout is going to be the most balls-to-the-wall drag I have ever done.
Has Talita picked her song?
I was going to ask.
Oh, it's not going
to
just
be a...
You
don't have to reveal it. But
it's not just going to be a song.
A mashup?
I'm doing a mix.
Oh, yes! Very exciting.
I
love those.
When this episode airs, I will... If you listen to it around midday, I will probably be somewhere getting pads made. Because I will be padded this year.
What?
Yes. Padded for the gods.
And... I will be working with somebody to make a custom outfit.
Dun, dun, dun. Eric, you're going to have to get some video of this for me.
Okay.
It is going to be redonkulous.
Oral's going to be so jealous.
Oh, girl. I told him about it today. I told him who was going to make my outfit and what my idea is for the outfit and what my idea is for the mix, or at least the start of the mix.
Uh-huh.
He 100% approves of all of it.
Yay!
Excellent.
So those are the two little things. The other big thing is Kesha announced a cruise.
Very excited. Yes.
Of course.
February 17th.
She saw Jonathan Colton and decided that was a good idea.
To the 21st, 2019. It's the Weird and Wonderful cruise or something along those lines. Noted artists that will be on this cruise besides Kesha will be Betty Who, Big Frida, Rabble.
Oh damn.
Superfruit.
Superfruit.
What?
And from RuPaul's Drag Race, Bob the Drag Queen, Detox, and Thorgy Thor.
Holy shit.
With more to be announced. And there is a thing called the Lip Sync for Your Lifeboat, hosted by Kesha, and I want to be in it.
Oh my god.
Did you wish really hard?
Apparently I did. So if you see me scrambling to get my passport in the next...
You got some time.
Yeah, there's still time. I still have like 8 months to figure this out. It's a four-night, something like that, cruise. I forget what the whole deal is. It sails out of Tampa and goes to Nassau.
Oh, damn.
That's weird.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you have an arch nemesis? Did somebody make this booby trap for you? This feels like it's almost too perfect.
It's a trap. I know, right?
It's a trap.
It is too perfect.
It's crazy. Because if I don't get her to sign my tattoos in August when we go see her in Tampa, you know I'm going to find some way on that cruise. Because you know I'm going to go on it. At this point, it's a matter of fact. You can pre-register. Search for Kesha Cruise. It's the weird and something cruise. And you can pre-register to get a spot. And if you did it before a certain time, you get the first set of pre-sale spots. And if you do it after, then it's a different thing. But it's $8.95 per person, double occupancy room. And apparently they have a monthly payment plan. So my fat ass can still afford it. So, because we got Provincetown coming up in a couple of weeks. And I'm like, that money's sitting in that account. I'm like, when we go up there, when that vacation rolls around, my account's going to be like, oh my God, look at all this money I have too. God, I'm broke again. But it'll be delightful. So that's what's giving me life this month.
I want to give a quick shout out to Make Noise out of Asheville, North Carolina. The reason I wasn't at the Heroes Con all weekend is I went to Asheville on Saturday and went to the Make Noise 10-year celebration. If you're not familiar with Make Noise, most of you probably aren't. They make modular synthesizer modules. That seems redundant. But they've been doing it for 10 years. The team there has a very homespun, like, do-it-yourself attitude, and they've got fabulous modules and even more fabulous pink patch cables that they did not have when I got there, and I was very sad. But I now am the proud owner of 4-5 Make Noise modules in my synthesizer. So they are a really cool company. If I was brave enough to not work for where I work, I would totally work for them because they are doing some cool stuff. And I had a great time there at the festival. Got to meet some interesting artists that do modular work. Got to go to some good seminars and spent time with a friend of Eric and mine, Kyle.
Aww.
Who is moving back. So that is exciting. But yeah, it was great. Make Noise. If you check them out online, they have great videos up on YouTube that explain what they do. So if modular synthesizers means nothing to you, if you Google them on YouTube, you'll find some really cool educational videos.
That is some fine nerdiness there, sir.
I'm glad you enjoyed, loved my synthesizer picture.
You just mentioned something that's giving you life, and you used the word modular, and you dropped an educational video while doing it also. That is just some fine nerdiness right there.
Yeah, I try.
I like that synthesizer picture because Havoc was in the background looking like, that. Why aren't you paying attention to me?
I'm a living thing, Daddy.
So I think it's a theme now because there's already cats on synthesizers. There's a picture of Odin the cat up on the synthesizer that I've got, and then Havoc's now in the background. I need Maddie to do something.
So Maddie's going to get on top of the synthesizer?
Basically, she'll just be like hanging off it like, hey. What's going on?
Your pets are like, so this is the thing now you love, not us?
Basically. So yeah, it's very exciting. I've been having fun with it. I'm getting in touch with the community here in Orlando, but if you're interested in any of this modular synthesizer stuff, it's just all over the YouTubes. Lots of great artists. Check them out. And that's all I got. Thank you for listening. We'll be back in 2 short weeks with more of our gay and geeky podcast, Flame On. Please tell a friend. We definitely want to get the word out as much as we can. And don't forget, flameonshow.com has all of your one-stop shop for our what's going on, where we're on social media. And please reach out to us and say you're listening, because every time we hear that, an angel gets its wings. I think that's how that works. I don't know.
I thought one becomes one of the fallen.
That also may happen. It's true. Anyway, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.